Aunt Carol is going abroad next month and wants me to go with her, burst in Jo, flying out of her chair in an uncontrollable rapture. No, dear, not you. It's Amy. Oh, Mother! She's too young. It's my turn first. I've wanted it so long. It would do me so much good and be so altogether splendid. I must go. I'm afraid it's impossible, Jo. Aunt says Amy, decidedly. And it is not for us to dictate when she offers such a favor. It's always so. Amy has all the fun and I have all the work. It isn't fair. Oh, it isn't fair, cried Jo passionately. I'm afraid it is partly your own fault, dear. When Aunt spoke to me the other day, she regretted your blunt manners and too independent spirit. And here she writes, as if quoting something you had said, I planned at first to ask Jo, but as favors burden her, and she hates French, I think I won't venture to invite her. Amy is more docile, will make a good companion for Flo, and receive gratefully any help the trip may give her. Oh, my tongue, my abominable tongue! Why can't I learn to keep it quiet? Groaned Jo, remembering words which had been her undoing. When she had heard the explanation of the quoted phrases, Mrs. March said sorrowfully, I wish you could have gone, but there is no hope of it this time, so try to bear it cheerfully, and don't sadden Amy's pleasure by reproaches or regrets. I'll try, said Jo, winking hard as she knelt down to pick up the basket she had joyfully upset. I'll take a leaf out of her book and try not only to seem glad, but to be so, and not grudge her 1 minute of happiness. But it won't be easy, for it is a dreadful disappointment. And poor Jo bedewed the little fat pincushion she held with several very bitter tears. Jo, dear, I'm very selfish, but I couldn't spare you, and I'm glad you're not going quite yet, whispered Beth, embracing her, basket and all, with such a clinging touch and loving face that Jo felt comforted in spite of the sharp regret that made her want to box her own ears and humbly beg Aunt Carol to burden her with this favor and see how gratefully she would bear it. By the time Amy came in, Jo was able to take her part in the family jubilation. Not quite as heartily as usual, perhaps, but without repinings at Amy's good fortune. The young lady herself received the news as tidings of great joy, went about in a solemn sort of rapture, and began to sort her colours and pack her pencils that evening, leaving such trifles as clothes, money, and passports to those less absorbed in visions of art than herself. "It isn't a mere pleasure trip to me, girls," she said impressively, as she scraped her best palette. "It will decide my career. For if I have any genius, I shall find it out in Rome, and will do something to prove it." "Suppose you haven't," said Jo, sewing away, with red eyes, at the new collars which were to be handed over to Amy. "Then I shall come home and teach drawing for my living," replied the aspirant for fame, with philosophic composure. But she made a wry face at the prospect, and scratched away at her palette as if bent on vigorous measures before she gave up her hopes. "No, you won't. You hate hard work, and you'll marry some rich man and come home to sit in the lap of luxury all your days," said Jo. "Your predictions sometimes come to pass, but I don't believe that one will. I'm sure I wish it would, for if I can't be an artist myself, I should like to be able to help those who are," said Amy, smiling as if the part of Lady Bountiful would suit her better than that of a poor drawing teacher. Said Jo with a sigh. "If you wish it, you'll have it, for your wishes are always granted. Mine never." "Would you like to go?" asked Amy, thoughtfully patting her nose with her knife.
"Rather."
"Well, in a year or two I'll send for you, and we'll dig in the forum for relics, and carry out all the plans we've made so many times." "Thank you. I'll remind you of your promise when that joyful day comes, if it ever does," returned Jo, accepting the vague but magnificent offer as gratefully as she could. There was not much time for preparation, and the house was in a ferment till Amy was off. Joe bore up very well till the last flutter of blue ribbon vanished, when she retired to her refuge, the garret, and cried till she couldn't cry any more. Amy likewise bore up stoutly till the steamer sailed. Then, just as the gangway was about to be withdrawn, it suddenly came over her that a whole ocean was soon to roll between her and those who loved her best, and she clung to Laurie, the last lingerer, saying with a sob, "Oh, take care of them for me, and if anything should happen—" "I will, dear, I will, and if anything happens, I'll come and comfort you," whispered Laurie, little dreaming that he would be called upon to keep his word. So Amy sailed away to find the old world, which is always new and beautiful to young eyes, while her father and friend watched her from the shore, fervently hoping that none but gentle fortunes would befall the happy-hearted girl, who waved her hand to them till they could see nothing but the summer sunshine dazzling on the sea. Chapter 31. Our Foreign Correspondent. London. Dearest people, here I really sit at a front window of the Bath Hotel, Piccadilly. It's not a fashionable place, but Uncle stopped here years ago and won't go anywhere else. However, we don't mean to stay long, so it's no great matter. Oh, I can't begin to tell you how I enjoy it all. I never can, so I'll only give you bits out of my notebook, for I've done nothing but sketch and scribble since I started. I sent a line from Halifax, when I felt pretty miserable, but after that I got on delightfully, seldom ill, on deck all day, with plenty of pleasant people to amuse me. Everyone was very kind to me, especially the officers. Don't laugh, Joe. Gentlemen really are very necessary aboard ship, to hold on to, or to wait upon one. And as they have nothing to do, it's a mercy to make them useful. Otherwise they would smoke themselves to death, I'm afraid. Aunt and Flo were poorly all the way, and liked to be let alone. So when I had done what I could for them, I went and enjoyed myself. Such walks on deck, such sunsets, such splendid air and waves. It was almost as exciting as riding a fast horse, when we went rushing on so grandly. I wish Beth could have come. It would have done her so much good. As for Joe, she would have gone up and sat on the main top jib, or whatever the high thing is called, made friends with the engineers, and tooted on the captain's speaking trumpet. She'd have been in such a state of rapture. It was all heavenly. But I was glad to see the Irish coast, and found it very lovely, so green and sunny, with brown cabins here and there, ruins on some of the hills, and gentlemen's country seats in the valleys, with deer feeding in the parks. It was early in the morning, but I didn't regret getting up to see it, for the bay was full of little boats, the shore so picturesque, and a rosy sky overhead. I never shall forget it. At Queenstown, one of my new acquaintances left us, Mr. Lennox, and when I said something about the Lakes of Killarney, he sighed and sang, with a look at me. "Oh, have you e'er heard of Kate Kearney? She lives on the banks of Killarney. From the glance of her eye, shun danger and fly, for fatal's the glance of Kate Kearney." Wasn't that nonsensical? We only stopped at Liverpool a few hours. It's a dirty, noisy place, and I was glad to leave it. Uncle rushed out and bought a pair of dog-skin gloves, some ugly, thick shoes, and an umbrella, and got shaved a la mutton chop, the first thing. Then he flattered himself that he looked like a true Briton. But the first time he had the mud cleaned off his shoes, the little bootblack knew that an American stood in them, and said with a grin,
"There you are, sir. I've give 'em the latest Yankee shine."
It amused Uncle immensely. Oh, I must tell you what that absurd Lennox did. He got his friend Ward, who came on with us, to order a bouquet for me, and the first thing I saw in my room was a lovely one with Robert Lennox's compliments on the card. Wasn't that fun, girls? I like travelling. I never shall get to London if I don't hurry. The trip was like riding through a long picture gallery, full of lovely landscapes. The farmhouses were my delight, with thatched roofs, ivy up to the eaves, latticed windows, and stout women with rosy children at the doors. The very cattle looked more tranquil than ours, as they stood knee-deep in clover, and the hens had a contented cluck, as if they never got nervous like Yankee biddies.